Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a Democrat with a slight lean toward the moderate side.
My name's Greg. I'll be your liberal Democrat tonight from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And I'm Emily.
So please find us on the web at amoreperfectunion.com. And we also have blogs and commentary there as well as our podcasts. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us get even more listeners. 2016, a brand new year. And lots of stuff is happening as we are now in the last, what do you call it, the last quarter mile of the race for Iowa and then New Hampshire.
So close. So close.
3 weeks and counting, and I'm sure it can't get here quick enough for many.
Oh, I can almost taste it. This is dragging on. But what's really been exciting for me is the money is finally being – we're going to be talking about money first.
And I love it. Because money talks.
And right. And money talks, and something that bulls do walks when it comes to politics. And last quarter money raising numbers were just released. And there's always surprises, and it's always interesting. And I definitely want to get your guys' takes. But for those of you who don't know, on the Democratic side, I know we talk a lot about the Republican side because it's a little more interesting this season. But Sanders, the Burnmeister, raised $33 million last quarter. And that's amazing, especially since Hillary, HRC, raised $37, only $4 million more than Bernie. What do you guys think of that?
Well, let me say this first. So, you know, I haven't had a chance to analyze the Republican data, but I did a little research actually in Hillary. And, you know, burn rates are a big deal. And it really tells you if a candidate is feeling, you know, if they're feeling the burn, I guess you could say. So I had to. So apparently Hillary's burn rate of that $37 million that she raised, she's burned through 86% of that in 3 months. So I think that says something about, you know, the pressure she's feeling for Bernie.
What is the burn rate from Bernie?
You know, I'm actually looking that up right now as we speak because I'm not finding it anywhere. Everybody's talking about Hillary, and I'm not seeing Bernie's burn rate.
Well,
so
you know, Bernie has a lot of costs. I mean, he has to buy like hard candy, Vicks vapor rub. He actually pays people now to yell at kids to get off his lawn.
The rotors on the push mower have to be sharpened occasionally.
Exactly. I mean, he's probably burned through that, you know, a lot. So.
Well, we've just insulted about 30% of our audience. A couple of things about that. Now, burn rate is very important, and it's interesting to hear that statistic that she's burned through some 80 some odd percent of her money so far, which was at the end of the year, I think she raised $112 million. But she still does have $38 million on hand as of this past weekend, 2 days ago. And Sanders has $28 million on hand. So, you know, she may be going through hers faster, but she has a bit of a cushion there. And, you know, on the Republican side, talk about people who are in the money. Dr. Ben Carson came in with $23 million for the fourth quarter, which was a very impressive amount for him. And Ted Cruz was second with $20
million. Okay, and, well, I'm going to interrupt you there.
Let me just say one more thing.
Oh, sure.
The others have not reported yet because their numbers are so low. Right. Go ahead, Greg.
But the fact that Ben Carson was the number one GOP candidate is like mind-boggling. I mean –
I actually heard he actually woke up and found out that number. You know, I feel like, well, here's my take on Ben Carson. So a lot of these guys, I don't want to say they're dark horses because they have name recognition, but there have been these folks like the Run Ben Run pack that have been out there for a couple of years now that have been pushing the branding of Ben Carson. So I think that his fundraising the evidence of that branding over the past couple of years, I think that's where it's coming from.
Right, right. But there comes a point where branding meets reality. You know, and I think
that hasn't happened yet.
Oh, I disagree. We saw his numbers hit high, and they were like, oh, we're really pushing this guy. And it finally came out that he really doesn't know what he's talking about.
Poor man.
What's that?
The poor man. I mean,
oh yeah, okay.
I think he's brilliant. I'm sure he's a very smart man. He just, I mean, I oh my gosh, he would make a great character, I think.
Oh yeah, if I was writing a play, I would be like, oh, this is the guy I want. Yeah, he's a great character.
And Jay Farrow is doing an incredible job on SNL doing Ben Carson.
It's very awesome.
My neurologist, because you know I have a guy for everything. I have a plumber if you need him. I have a guy, but my neurologist actually said I would love to vote for Ben Carson because he's been a big Ben Carson fan for years, even before it was cool. I have the only hipster neurologist I know. He said, but he can't. He said because he thinks his politics are terrible. So.
And yeah. Yet there are people that are sticking with him. People seem to be – a lot of loyalty this particular cycle, which I don't think we've seen in previous cycles.
No,
you know, when
like
Rudy
this.
Giuliani fell off the map, he fell off the map. Same with Fred Thompson. Same with Herman Cain. But people like Carson and Cruz, you know, they're hanging in there with their base.
Do you think it's – well, I'll go on, Emily.
Well, you know, what I was going to say is the reason this is because we've never seen this many – So basically what they're all doing is standing at the end of the bridge saying, you jump first. No, you jump first.
I have this theory that it has a lot to do with this whole, maybe we need someone in politics who's completely inexperienced. And so we have the Cruzes with only one term, the Rubio with one term, the Trumps, the Carson, who else who haven't? And they're like, oh,
Fiorina.
Never been elected, right.
Never been elected, which, you know, 8 years ago, this was the thing that everyone was screaming about Obama. Like, oh, we can't do this. But at the same time, going back to my plumber, I would never hire a plumber with, well, let's give that guy a shot with no experience. Or let's give, you know, these people with no experience, this is the guy I want to fix my house or, you know, be my doctor or be my lawyer, you know, and all
right.
of a sudden they're like, that's what we need to fix. Someone with no experience. You know?
Well, right. This is the campaign of crazy hair. On the right, you've got Trump. On the left, you've got Bernie Sanders. And people are just flocking to, you know, people that aren't exactly politically correct.
Yeah.
So I guess you need to call in your folks, you know, Kevin, and you know, tell Hillary to mess up the hair and don't use a hairspray.
you think that's what she's lacking? Okay, all right.
You know, maybe
she calls me, I'll let her know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being serious though. Is if you look at some of these candidates, even though Trump dresses well, he has a very odd look. The guy has no problem saying whatever he thinks. And Bernie's very much the same kind of guy.
Right. But they also appeal to the same demographic.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's the demographic for Bernie. His problem is he can't win the primary with that demographic. I mean, you can't win the demographic with white males.
You see, now I'm going to jump
students.
In. And I said this back in like November. I'll say it now for Emily's ears. I am of the opinion, as much as I think that Hillary probably will be the nominee of the party. This meme now that Bernie does not appeal to minorities, that he's not appealing to the Latino demographic, that he has a very narrow base. I truly think that if he were to win Iowa and win New Hampshire, I think you'd see that base expand very quickly. I think, quite frankly, the minority portion of the Democratic Party has not tuned into this race yet the way the overall party has. And when these people learn about Bernie Sanders, there's nothing for them not to like about Bernie Sanders. I mean, if they could adopt Bill Clinton as the first black president, which of course, you know, was insulting to black people, but that's what was said by Maya Angelou, no less.
Sure.
And if they could adopt Hillary Clinton, and if they could adopt John Edwards, who did very well with that demographic,
sure.
There's no reason why Bernie Sanders shouldn't either. His policies are right down the middle of where the African American community is.
Yeah, but like you said, if he could win Iowa and New Hampshire, but if I could grow two wings and a turbine, I'd be a 747.
Well, listen, he's leading in New Hampshire and has a very good shot of winning.
Here's the real deal, though, Kevin, and maybe this will warm your heart for this evening. There's no way that Bernie can win New Hampshire, and I'll tell you why. So you have a bigger state, you know, one of the Super Tuesday-type deals. If you look at a state like New Hampshire, there isn't a central area of young millennials that are going to go out and turn out to vote for Bernie Sanders. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Okay, well, all
and
I
that's
can say
what
from,
he would need.
Emily, from your lips to Wolf Blitzer's ears, that's all I can say. Now, there are some other people in the races, although they may not be for long. Martin O'Malley and Jim Gilmore hit a little speed bump in the road this past week. Emily, you want to bring us up to speed on that?
So did a little research, and Martin O'Malley obviously did not have a team working very hard for him in Ohio, which is Greg's home state, because he turns in his petitions, and the goal in Ohio is 1,000 signatures. He turns in 1,275, and only 772 are good. This is a swing state. I mean, Greg, come on, tell us something about this.
Well, first of all, I've told this story times before. Ohio's tough. Our Secretary of State is very, very known to be tough on signatures. So, I mean, if you've got the wrong, if anything looks out of it, they throw it out. So I've worked on ballots before, and signatures, you have to have at least three times just to be safe. So
right.
1250 is lazy. And Ohio. So, yeah.
I mean, seriously, they could have gone to three Friday night football games and picked that up with room to spare, I think.
Right.
So,
and the other thing about Ohio that people don't know is that it has a large population of people named Michael Mouse. And if they signed with their nickname Mickey, they get immediately thrown off the ballot.
They're SOL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, okay, you know, it's very interesting on the Republican side of things. Jim Gilmore, poor Jim Gilmore from Virginia. So he hasn't qualified. I believe it was in Alabama, Arizona, and a couple other states. And, you know, he's nice enough man, but, you know, he's got to give up the ghost soon, right?
Well, what's he giving it up for? You know, with all of these people, every week we would talk about who's going to drop out. And I always said, what are they going home to? This is their one shot at maybe becoming a speaker and getting $40,000 for speeches, or maybe getting a radio program someplace. I'm not sure that Jim Gilmore really has a whole lot to go back home to, wherever home is for him.
Hey, home is in Virginia, actually.
I thought so.
But, you know, I'll say this.
Personal.
Is I can look at some of these guys and know they're up to something. Someone like Jim Gilmore, he's an upstanding man. He means it. He's in it to win it. He's a good guy. Someone like Mike Huckabee is a shyster trying to up his speaking fees. That's how I feel, at least. So I just don't know, you know, what's up with Jim, because to be honest with you, I don't think he has an end game of thinking the way someone like a Huckabee would.
Interesting.
I don't know. Huckabee was a fine candidate in, 2008? He was a fine candidate. He got his own show and is making money with a capital M.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, it would be cynical of me. Okay, sure. To think that there's maybe one or two people in this land who are like, you know, my career is not getting any better or higher, so why not run, see how far I go, and see if Fox will hire me for some new blood.
Okay, so then when he releases a book in a year or so, I'm going to send you a really sweet I told you so.
I'll buy the book.
I will say this, you know, if that is indeed his master plan, he then is truly the dumbest man in the universe, because to give up a Fox primetime show where he was pulling in between $2 and $5 million a year, to give that up to try to up his speaking fees to $10,000
seems like... And a book deal. I'm just throwing out a guess, sure. But yeah.
Okay.
Well, supposedly Trump ran in 2012. Right. Do you remember he said, oh, okay, maybe I'll run, maybe I won't.
He considered it, yeah.
He considered it. And then they said, well, we have to look at your taxes. And he said, no, I won't. And he had to quit the Celebrity Apprentice for a little bit. And he came back, and they gave him a better deal at NBC. They gave him, like, a lot more money. And there's a thought that he's now going to push this for an even bigger deal. Like, he may get like a $100 million from NBC. Like, this is yet another conspiracy Trump theory.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though, is I don't think that's crazy per se. I mean, you know, it's just like in radio markets. When someone is in Virginia Beach, which is a mid-level market, they always want to go up. And when they are hitting towards the end of their career, sometimes they're cool with coming back down. But I think that Huckabee, I mean, maybe he could be working a deal. Who knows?
Yeah. I guarantee you that Trump is going to come out of 2015, 2016 with more money than he went into them with. There's no doubt about that. He will find a way to turn this into a money-making proposition, because that's what he does. And speaking of Donald Trump, he started on the airwaves today in Iowa and New Hampshire with a new campaign, a new advertising campaign. He vows now to spend $25 million on advertising in those two states between now and the caucus and the primary. Of course, for him, $25 million is like probably 15 bucks to me. I don't know. But
let's drill down on that for a second. How many candidates –
on what 15 bucks to me is?
No, the 25 million. So we see candidates out here. They're saying, oh, we're going to start new ads in New Hampshire on Monday. But they don't come out and say – I'm going to spend $25 million. So do you think he's doing that for show?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, he's doing it for parallel reasons. But you're quite right that one of them is to make the point – and I heard, frankly, other commentators talking about this today – to make the point that he is willing to invest in himself and prove that he's not just doing this as a lark, that he's not just, you know, going to – drop out of the race if he doesn't have a good showing in Iowa. So part of it is to show that he means business, and also to validate that point that he doesn't need super PACs, that he will self-finance his presidential bid if need be. And, you know, there are people that were probably sitting on the sidelines wondering, you know, if push comes to shove, will this guy reach into his pockets for the $500 million that he would need for a fall campaign? And I think that this is his way of saying, look, I'm not afraid to write the checks.
Right. Well, I agree. I mean, I guess I can agree with that.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for, you know, everyone who hates Citizens United. Finally, someone who's their own man or their own person or own woman, that they're not beholden to a super PAC or a billionaire, and who's, I guess, their own billionaire. But, I mean, that's kind of awesome in its own sense that, you know. But the
it would be if it was anybody else in the world.
But Trump.
Right. I think it's a big statement. You know, it's like, I love America, that I'm willing to go into my own pocket.
Yep. I think if I was 14 and I was still reading those Ayn Rand books and I was like, this is awesome, then he'd be my candidate, you know. But I'm not 14.
Speaking of people who come out of the entertainment world and could potentially self-fund or partially self-fund a campaign, here's a question for the two of you. Go back now to June of 2015. Before Bernie Sanders took off, people were still not sure about Hillary Clinton. Elizabeth Warren had already said she was not going to run. If Oprah Winfrey had done what Donald Trump did, do you think that she'd be a contender now? Because I will go on record as saying I do.
Absolutely, without question.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, you know, I mean, I could see her going and doing the, you get a vote, and you get a vote, and you get a vote, and, you know. Oh,
well, but
gosh.
She has branding, but she's a great orator, and she has a presence. Oh, I think she'd be a wonderful candidate.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that in the, you know, in the next cycle, you know, in 2020 or 2024. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's why she just started the Weight Watchers 2016 commercials.
Oh.
That's terrible.
How many of those has she done? And the other thing about, you know, Trump on the campaign trail today, I guess all things always lead back to the Donald, is that he was a factor even when Bill Clinton was campaigning for Hillary in New Hampshire today. Bill made a wonderful speech. I don't know whether either of you had a chance to catch it. Me being terminally unemployed, I have all the time in the world to watch these things in the middle of the day.
I had to go to a Girl Scout meeting today, so no.
But Bill made a terrific speech. And as soon as he was done and he hit the rope line, there was Andrea Mitchell to ask him about Donald Trump.
Of course.
Now, Bill didn't take the bait this time. He showed a lot of discipline, and you could see in his eyes that he thought about answering, and then he backed off. But you have to wonder if he'll be able to be that disciplined for a full month with people trying to goad him into, you know, starting a little tete-a-tete with Donald.
Well, you know, I saw that clip, and actually I was thinking – he had a moment there where it clicked that was like, oh, yeah, my wife's running for president. I'm not.
Right.
Is what I think actually happened. But, you know, why are we spending so much time on him? Why can't we talk about what she's going to do? I mean, they have so many other things they could have asked him.
Right.
And but, you know, it's all about ratings, of course.
Yeah, and not for anything. President Clinton is a professional. I mean, he's the best. And yeah. I mean, he'll look and he'll do his little smile and he'll go, no, I don't think so. And he'll just walk away like and do that little chuckle that he does thinking, I'm a president. I don't have to do this. And just walk away. He'll be fine. He'll be absolutely fine.
He will be fine. And, you know, he's got a new thing. He is a consummate performer, actually, yes. Beyond Donald Trump. And he's now shifted his political persona to that of grandpa.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He loves to drop in that he's a grandpa now and the world is peachy keen. And he pulls it off masterfully. And if he's on the campaign trail giving two speeches a week like that between now and February 1st, I do fear for Bernie Sanders because Bernie has no surrogates, certainly nobody like that, and never will. And I just don't know how, you know, even with Bernie's own charisma and charm, which does exist, much as we kid him, I don't know how he could take on that dynamic duo and persevere and win Iowa, but he still might.
No, not. I mean, I was going to say the Killer Mike interviews with Bernie Sanders are really good if you're a fan of Killer Mike. But besides that, no. No, not at all. But speaking of fans, turns out President Obama has a fan.
He does.
Not as good of a segue as we've had in the past, but of comedian Jerry Seinfeld. And Jerry Seinfeld has had this wonderful YouTube program called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And it's kind of a difficult concept to sum up, but it's it's comedians in cars and they get coffee and they film this and it's wonderful. If you haven't watched it, go see it. It's on the YouTube.
And every week he has a different famous comic.
And every week he has a different famous car. Classic. Right. And it's wonderful. And they talk about the car and then they talk about coffee and they talk about nothing. Last week he had President Obama. And it's – did you guys get a chance to see it?
Oh, sure.
Oh, absolutely. It was awesome.
What'd you guys think? I mean, any standout moments?
Well, first of all, I thought the first joke in it was when Jerry actually – you see Obama at the Oval Office desk working and you see Jerry come up to the window behind him and knock on the window like, are you ready yet? Which was a great visual gag. But there was a lot of
– just another
jumper. Yeah.
Right.
What did you think, Em?
You know, I thought it was awesome. First of all, I love the little the way he does, you know, with the new cars, the old cars. I just love it. It's cool feel. But, you know, the most interesting part of the whole thing is, you know, they made this big to-do of pulling up to the gate and said, "You're not going anywhere with the president." And, you know, they just, you know, really beefed it up a little bit. So I'm wondering how many takes that took.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, they shot a lot of footage to get the 20 minutes that they put into the show. There's no doubt about it. But Obama is, boy.
He's a fun guy.
He is, you know, the funniest of the 20th century presidents. And now, I don't know, maybe Millard Fillmore was a funny guy. Maybe Grover Cleveland
could
spin a tail. But of the people that we've ever heard on recording or seen on TV, he is by far, he surpasses John Kennedy. He surpasses Ronald Reagan, in my opinion. He is by far the most comfortable and the most charismatic comic force we've ever had in a president.
And, you know, I've said this about Rubio. Rubio's not ready. Give Rubio another 4, 6, 8 years, and he'll be comfortable.
Now, you guys know that I live in the same town as DJ. I'm not trying to get shot at. So, but I will say about Rubio, though, is he has a lot of time ahead of him.
Oh, yeah. That's why I say give him time and he'll be, because he always does that, like the water or like the, wait a second. It's that pause where, you know.
The only
Obama
problem is,
just,
is
his cadence is just right on. And let me tell that boom, 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 boom. You know, he's zigging zags.
I'm going to play devil's advocate on that because I agree. I mean, I personally look at the guy and feel that he's a little too young, a little too green to be president of the United States. Oh, a lot of people thought that about Barack Obama, and he still got elected, and I think they were wrong. But that said, the thing about Rubio is, you know, maybe he should have waited one more cycle. Of course, then if there was a Republican had won, then he'd have to wait for that guy to run again and then their vice president to run. So he could have gotten blocked out that way. But, you know, if you think about, Chris Christie in 2012, that was his moment in the sun. And time has passed him by now. The same thing with Jeb Bush. 2012 was probably his moment to get the nomination and run with it. And he's, you know, history has passed him by now. It's very possible that the same thing could happen to Marco Rubio in 2020 or 2024. Who knows who's going to be, you know, maybe Zach Galifianakis is going to be the Republican nominee. I don't know.
I mean, I think Marco Rubio, I think he's 44. I think I'm accurate on that.
I think, but he could be 44. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah. So he has a good 4 to 5 presidential cycles before he's pretty much non-marketable.
Yeah, age-wise, yeah. But what I'm saying is sometimes a person – like, for instance, he's not running for the Senate again. Now, he could have, but he's not. So let's say he doesn't get the nomination now. Then he's Rick Santorum at that point. He's an ex-senator, one-term senator. I'm not sure that he's going to have the national gravitas to mount another campaign in 4 years. This may be his window of time, for better or for worse.
Oh, yeah. The resale value of him is going down quickly if he doesn't get it. I mean, for lack of a – if he's a car, this is it.
Yeah. And that's the thing I can't figure out. If I was a Republican money person, I would be backing him all the way because to me, he's the only – you know, I don't know what the metaphor is – but he's certainly, you know, the horse that I would try to, you know, win the Triple Crown with. And I don't understand why these people are sitting on the sidelines letting this guy just, you know, wave in the wind.
It goes back to, you know, do you guys ever go to casinos?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Everyone loves to go, but what? Nobody likes to lose, right?
Right. Nobody wants
to
spend
that
money.
So when you still have 11 people in, I think it is now, I mean, it's just absurd. No one wants to pick a losing horse.
Right, right.
So, you know, the people that have been with the Bushes or the Clintons forever and ever, amen, most likely that's not going to change. But when you have these guys that are barely polling, people are unsure, they're just not willing to jump on until, you know, the herd thins a little bit. I mean, I think it boils down to that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
We got to thin this herd. We got to break up this clown car.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how long that takes. It may not happen right after Iowa. No. May not happen right after New Hampshire.
No.
Now, going back to Obama, he was terrific on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, but he also has a day job,
which is being the
Commander-in-Chief.
I hear that.
And today he announced some executive actions that he plans on taking on how to curtail the sale of illegal guns or the transfer of guns illegally. The gun show loophole he's trying to tighten. I think there's a couple of other executive actions that that he's kind of polishing up and getting ready to sign. How do you guys think that's going to go over in the presidential campaign?
Ooh, heartburn city. So if he was to throw a Hail Mary of the last year of his presidency, this should be it, right?
This should be it.
It's, you know, I know that he made a commitment that he was going to address guns, but I also find it to be a bit distasteful with everything that's going on. And here's why I say this. Here's why I say this is, you know, he's in, you know, the last year of his presidency. He had 7 other years to start addressing these things, but it's the heightened media right now that is really pushing him to do this. So, you know what? If he was going to do it, why didn't he do it 3-4 years ago?
Well, he tried to do it after Sandy Hook. I don't frankly, I think that's unfair. You know, he tried to do it the legitimate way with congressional approval, and they balked at it. I think that he's looking at his desk now and saying, well, the stuff that I couldn't get to move, you know, get Congress to move on, I'm going to either have to move on it myself or leave it for the next president. And clearly on this, and I think on Gitmo, he's going to try to move it himself.
You know, we have a Congress that just doesn't do anything. I mean, literally they shut down the government or threatened to shut down the government just to pass spending bills, just to keep our – I mean, that's ridiculous. And if you look at the past couple of years, just little things, I mean, they have done fewer bills passed, you know, every year. It's less and less and less. And what was it? On immigration, they just sued the president over an executive order or threatened to sue him. And they said, hey, do you think you could maybe do this executive order? Boehner had said, yeah, maybe he'll do that. And then he backed off that. So what does he have to lose? I mean, half the country might hate him, and you know. And
but here's what he has to lose.
Yeah.
Here's what he has to lose. First of all, it's a presidential year, and you know what? I would venture to say not every Democrat is enthused about gun control. What do you guys say?
Hillary Clinton is changing that. The current debate between her and Sanders and O'Malley, to an extent, has shifted the paradigm for the Democrats. And if she gets the nomination, she has already kind of built her platform on taking on the NRA, which I think the Democratic Party is ready to do. I think that paradigm is going to shift in a big way. And frankly, Obama may be trying to buttress that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's – I mean, these are – from what I read, they weren't like extreme. They weren't. It wasn't even an assault weapon ban.
No, he can't do anything extreme. This is deeper around the edges stuff.
This was pretty mild, like things that even when I talk to my pretty hardcore weapons buddies, I'm like, would you be okay with this? And they're like, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I still get to keep my AR-15. You still get to keep your AR-15. I still get to keep my rocket. You still get to keep your rocket launcher. I mean, nothing bad. I mean, but just common sense.
You know what I guess I'm looking from a Virginia perspective right now. What I see going on is so right now our session, our General Assembly is going to be taking in about 9 days.
Sure.
And so we have a Democrat from Northern Virginia right outside of D.C. that is sponsoring legislation to close a mental hospital. The part of President Obama's action that I agree with is it's increasing the access for mental health determinations. But I just don't understand in a state where Hillary Clinton's right-hand guy, our governor, Terry McAuliffe, is allowing a Democrat to directly work against the interests of mental health so close to D.C.
So he's just closing it? I mean, there's usually...
He's putting in a bill to close a mental hospital.
Well, that's odd.
Well, and you know what's very interesting is I'm sure you've heard of Cray Deeds, who was a conservative Democrat from here, who's a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And his son attacked him with a knife, of course, and it's because they couldn't get a bed in a mental hospital. So not only is this totally off the plan book, this is I think, directly offensive to some of his seatmates.
So is this a... Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard not to agree. I mean, anytime we can help mental health, but it's not mental health can't always be tied to gun control. I mean, sometimes they're two different issues. And, you know, cutting out loopholes at gun shows, you know, and things like that. You know, I agree everything with what you said about more mental health, but those are all great things that we should be doing also, everything. This is one of those, like, liberals, yeah, let's do that too. And hey, I got a kitchen sink over here. Let's do that too. So I'm completely with you.
Well, so what do you guys think? I looked at the executive action a little bit of what he's talking about doing. So he wants to hire about 230 more FBI examiners for background checks.
More jobs.
More jobs, right?
Okay. More jobs. Isn't that what we want? I mean, expanded government, but more police. The expanded background checks is something that we've been complaining about, that background checks haven't been enough. But we don't want guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. We have laws on the books, but they're not being enforced. This is the sort of stuff that sounds like a good idea, right?
You know, overall, I don't disagree with the executive action, but I think we've got to see it laid out on the 12th. When he lays it out on the 12th, I think we'll see a clearer picture of how we're going to go about doing these things. So I think that's the proof will be in the pudding there for certain.
Cool. Excellent.
The last topic I want to segue to is the Oregon militia standoff, which is started a couple of days ago and is taking place now in some federal preserve in Oregon.
Oh, my gosh.
I think everybody agrees that these guys are a-holes. But, again, what is it going to portend for the presidential election?
You know, I don't think – that this is going to play too much into – well, you know, I take that back. It will play into it depending on how it goes down. That's what I think.
That's a good
how
point.
This gets resolved, it will matter.
Uh-huh.
Has any of the GOP candidates made comments on their Facebooks or their Twitters?
Several of them already have. I know Cruz. I believe – I'm not sure if Rand Paul has. But I would be interested.
Have any of them sent, like – snacks or anything to them or
no care packages yet that I've heard of, none yet. I mean, but these guys are absolutely insane,
right?
I mean, they're like loose cannons wrapped in morons,
right?
What are they trying to accomplish?
They're upset because two of their friends were put up on arson charges.
Yeah, no, I got that. But what are they trying to accomplish? Do they think that the government is going to release these guys? They know they're not.
They would like that, but they're also protesting. It was due to mandatory sentencing laws. A federal judge said that one of them was in for a month for burning 120 acres or 124 acres, which the
A federal land,
which they thought he was trying to do to cover up poaching, which
right.
they didn't prove, which I guess was alleged, excuse me. So they said he did his month, came out, and a federal judge said, no, minimum sentencing is this much. So they are protesting not only minimum sentencing, but third strike. So all
okay,
of a sudden
but- – But again, I'm going to jump in and say, forget the legalities of that case. It's okay. Not about that case. These guys didn't, you know, figure out how to get a year's worth of food into that facility, bring in all their weaponry, and put their lives on the line just to get these their friends their day in court.
They haven't these got guys, a year's worth of food in there.
Well, they say they're going to stay in there forever. I don't know what they've got in
no,
there.
No, this is the best part of the story, is they put out on Twitter today that they are requesting people send them snacks.
Okay.
Are you serious? Wow. Yeah,
so the FBI and the ATF are going to just let this stuff go through? Is that the idea?
Yeah, they want it all sent to one guy who supposedly is like their like guy on the outside who has like, oh, I'm their person who has visitation rights somehow. And they're like, oh, sure, we're going to let this guy through with all your supplies. And don't worry, it's fine. And he's supporting us. And everyone on the internet is just howling and making fun of him and calling him like, oh, did you run away and just bring a jar of peanut butter? And,
you know what I really have a problem with is by and large, most of the mainstream media is calling these guys militants. Hell no. These guys are absolutely domestic terrorists, period.
Absolutely.
Done.
End of sentence.
Done.
And you know what? This thing is going to end in violence because they want it to. Because if it ends any other way than them shooting somebody to death or someone on their side getting shot to death, they lost. And that's not what – they want to take down the Obama administration. This is their last year to do it. They want an armed insurrection. They want to, you know, use their Second Amendment rights or whatever that terminology is called, their Second Amendment protections or however people put that. And this is not going to end peaceably in my mind. These guys want to shoot out, and one way or the other, they're going to get it.
You know what I think the problem here, though, is that in the western part of the country, it's gone back many, many years with all of, you know, Ruby Ranch, Waco, all these types of situations where people are so sensitive about their land. I mean, they feel so wronged to such an extreme degree that basically what I saw from the press conference is they want ceded control of the land, period. So, you know, I don't see it happening, but, you know, I can't say I wish them well.
What happened to people making their own, you know, and when Obama said, you didn't build this, they were like, no, I created my own. And now they want to take government land.
And again, it's not about that. This is about their last shot at they want this. They want the apocalypse. They want an armed insurrection where they take on the military and they think that the military is going to side with them. And in their minds, they see Obama being dragged out of the White House with his family and thrown in jail or something. I think these
are the same
really
nuts that are doomed. You know, these are the same nuts that are doomsday preppers.
Yes.
They're opportunists. And you know what? They say they're constitutionalists, but you know what I have to say about this is they're not Republicans. They're domestic terrorists. Period.
Yeah, well, they're Republicans and domestic terrorists. But on that note, we really probably should wrap things
how,
up.
How we say that usually is not every Republican is a domestic terrorist, but every domestic terrorist is a Republican? Is that what
no,
you guys
I would
going
say?
Come
no,
on,
I would
guys.
Say, I would say that.
That's what you guys were saying.
The Republican on this broadcast is not a domestic terrorist.
Right, that's what
and,
I said.
And DJ may or may not be, but the rest of them definitely are.
He would be having a heart attack right now, guys. Right
he will
now.
Be when he hears this.
he doesn't listen to me anyways.
We love DJ.
We love
and,
DJ.
And we love Jonah.
Love
we
you.
Love Alan,
we love all the Republicans.
But mostly we love ourselves.
Yes. This is all in good fun. Please send and we, all hate mail to Kevin.
And with that, I would love to feed dinner to my children. So I
Excellent.
Think we should wrap this up. Any last thoughts?
Yeah. Can we do a quick prediction?
Yes, yeah. That's what I was just about to say.
Next two to drop out. Not one, two.
Next two.
Oh, okay.
Martin O'Malley.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be one.
Uh-huh.
And I think Huckabee.
Okay, and I'll say Jim Gilmore, and I think Rand Paul.
I'm going to go with Martin O'Malley, and I'm hoping Rick Santorum.
Oh, Rick Santorum's still in? I keep forgetting about
and,
him.
And the reason that I didn't mention him is he just started running ads today. So that means he may have a little, you know, dead cat bounce left in him.
Oh, wow. That was a good one. That was a good one, Emily. Oh, kudos to you.
Well, I also predict that we will be doing another podcast next week.
I hope so.
So until then, I'm going to say for everybody, it's been a wonderful, frolicking half hour, actually 45 minutes, and please tune in again soon.
Good night, guys.
So please find us on the web at amoreperfectunion.com. And we also have blogs and commentary there as well as our podcasts. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us get even more listeners.